miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps die on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Little honey on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, February 20, 2021. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are, living through the greatest social engineering experiment ever conducted on mankind. Yes, a social experiment, a physical experiment involving our DNA, and possibly even a spiritual experiment. Well, guys, how's that working out for you back at home? And if you boil it all down, if you distill down this complicated agenda, we are really all being conned into accepting a future that we would have never accepted otherwise. Yeah. And the great building block of this strategy, of course, is fear. Fear of the phantom menace, the invisible enemy. And as it turns out, guys, so much of this grand agenda is being engineered by a very small group of interconnected people, a very small tribe, and I use that word very carefully. And hopefully, last night, a lot of people listened to Giuseppe's excellent interview with Nikki Rapana. You know, a woman who pretty much single-handedly exposed, you know, a somewhat obscure part of this agenda. An obscure doctrine called communitarianism. And, you know, which really, you know, I see communitarianism as really as a way to get people to love their servitude, to create a slave hive mind mentality amongst the masses. And in case you missed that excellent interview on the Perfect Triangle with Giuseppe, it's posted over there at grizzom.blogspot.com. That's grizzom.blogspot.com. Yes, the godmother of communitarianism, Nikki Rapana. Excellent information from her. And of course, under communitarianism, we are taught we are all one. We are all equal. We're all in this together, guys. Where we go one, we go all. My mask protects you. Your mask protects me. I wear my mask out of respect for other people's safety. Yes, now we're responsible for other people's safety thanks to COVID, the grand deception of COVID. And as Nikki pointed out last night, this whole COVID thing has sort of been the grand coming out party for communitarianism. Yeah, I actually had a guy tell me the other day when I was at breakfast that he wears his mask out of respect for others, out of respect for other people's safety. And I said to him, well, if that's respect, I don't want anything to do with it. We didn't really like that response. Conversation kind of came to an end. Yeah, so communitarianism, and as Larkin, Texas has put it, it's totalitarianism with a smile. And, you know, quick shout out to Brian and Jenna and Lark. They're kind of part of Nikki's crew. And they've really been working to get the word out about communitarianism more than anyone else I know. So good work, guys. That's how I learned about this stuff. And the thing is, you know, once you see this elephant in the room of communitarianism, you begin to see it everywhere. They're sowing the seeds right now of a slave hive mind for the great unwashed goyim cattle of the world. And, you know, of course, Nikki Rapana is really the first one to sort of put the finger on this guy, Amitai Enzioni, as the progenitor of this, you know, thinking and this concept of communitarianism. So I kind of got curious and I started looking at this guy's background, Amitai Enzioni, and it's a very interesting background indeed. So Amitai Enzioni is a German-born Israeli-American Jew. Don't you love that? The Israeli-American thing. The old dual citizen routine. Oh, yeah. And as we go deeper into his background, it will become very clear where his loyalties really lie. And incidentally, that is not his real name, Amitai Enzioni. And incidentally, the name Amitai Enzioni means truth of Zion in Hebrew. That's what the words are based on. And his real name is Warner Falk. Yeah, so we have this pattern here of name-changing dual citizen Jews. And I'm not picking on Jews. I'm just going where the evidence leads me, guys. Yeah. So anyway, Amitai Enzioni, a.k.a. Warner Falk, began studying Hebrew in Palestine in 1937. So, you know, back at that time, Palestine allowed so-called refugees, Jewish refugees, into the country. And incidentally, Amitai Enzioni is 92 years old now, so he's a very old man. So he changed his first name to Amitai, his Hebrew name. And Amitai is based on the Hebrew word for truth. So it's interesting that this man was living in Palestine before the founding of Israel as a refugee from Germany. And isn't it interesting, you know, you had these Jews in Palestine who were plotting to take the entire country away. And I'm sure at the time, most Palestinians were blissfully unaware of what was about to happen to them. That's something to think about, guys. So in 1946, Enzioni joined the Palmach, which is an elite commando force of the Haganah. And the Haganah was the underground Jewish army, a secret army within Palestine. Yes, a secret underground Jewish army who were essentially just waiting for the orders to take the country and purge the Palestinians. So think about that when we look into this guy's background and as we reveal who this man is and what he was really up to. So during his time in the Palmach, which is, you know, an elite commando force, okay, of the Haganah, the Jewish underground army, during his time in this organization, the Palmach, he blew up bridges and police stations, guys. Police stations. Think about that. Blowing up police stations. That's a terrorist act by anyone's standard, guys. And of course, anyone who's already looked into the founding of Israel already knows that Israel was founded with terrorism. Make no mistake, that's what it was. And think about it, guys. Here we have a man who was living in Palestine as a refugee, secretly plotting to take their land, to stab these people in the back, take all of their land, and work to destroy. We have a man who was living in Palestine as a refugee, secretly plotting to take their land, to stab these
their culture and their economy, to take it all.
So this is the great genius who came up with the communitarian ideology to create this slave-like mentality for the Goyim cattle. And this guy's background really says a lot about what he's really up to. Part of a secret Jewish army. And let's face it, guys, he was part of the Israeli so-called deep state at its very inception. That's pretty important. So in 1963, oh wait, before I go there, I left something out that's kind of important. He changed his name to Enzioni when the list of names for this underground army was discovered by authorities. And so once this list was discovered, he was given a new identity and a new set of identification papers. And that is when he changed his name to Enzioni. Yeah, so the truth of Zion, Enzioni, Zion. That's when he changed his name, when the list of these people, this secret army, was captured by authorities. I found that to be very interesting. So anyway, this guy moves, Enzioni moves to America in 1963, and I don't think it's too far-fetched to say that possibly he was sent on a secret mission as part of a secret army. It's possible. So he moves to America in 1963. He's written like something like 30 books, but his most influential book was titled The Active Society, published in 1968. And to quote from the book, Enzioni stresses that, quote, preferences are, to a significant extent, socially constructed and hence reflect the values of the communities people are members of. Therefore, one should not treat preferences as unadulterated expressions of individual freedom and should allow for public education to improve those preferences. When they turn asocial, and surely when they turn antisocial. Isn't that interesting? And when you strip away the big words and the obtuse wording, this guy wants to control how people think and behave. That's what it's all about, guys. And remember, part of an underground secret Jewish army that took everything from the Palestinians, and I mean everything. And he refers to communitarianism as a social steering system. A social steering system. Isn't that nice? A social engineering system is a lot more like it, isn't it? To control the Goyim cattle. And it's interesting, feminist Betty Friedan said that the active society was one of the major influences on her thinking. So Enzioni's book influenced Betty Friedan very greatly and her subsequent political activism as a feminist, a Jewish feminist, and a social engineer. And almost everyone in Enzioni's academic and social circles were Jewish, just to note. Yeah, so that is the great man, the genius who discovered the concept or created the concept of communitarianism. And let's look at another piece of the puzzle in this grand agenda that faces us right now. A name that's more relevant today than Amitai Enzioni in some ways, because he's still active. Klaus Schwab, even though he's an old man too, but he's very, very active. And it's not overstating it to say that Klaus Schwab is one of the most powerful and influential globalist oligarchs on the planet today. I don't think that's overstating it at all. And, you know, the World Economic Forum has nearly all of the Fortune 500 mega companies as members of its forum. And all these companies are thinking the same way with the same agenda. Yeah. So let's look into Klaus Schwab's background just a little bit. Because these are two pieces of the same kosher puzzle. And yes, I have confirmed beyond a doubt that Klaus Schwab is indeed a German-born Jew. That is not speculation at all. He is indeed a German-born Jew. And this guy's connections are simply amazing once you look into it. And let's just start off on something that I just find absolutely fascinating. Guess where Klaus Schwab was on the morning of 9/11/2001? Well, guys, as it turns out, Klaus Schwab was having breakfast at the East Park Synagogue in New York City. Oh, yeah. Having some gefilte fish at the East Park Synagogue in New York City on that fateful morning with his good friend, Rabbi Arthur Schneer. And Rabbi Arthur Schneer just happens to be the former head of the World Jewish Congress. And not only that, Rabbi Arthur Schneer, not only was he the former head of the World Jewish Congress, but also a close associate of the Bronfman family and the Lauder family, as in Estee Lauder. And, of course, the Bronfman family, one of the most powerful oligarch Jewish families in the world. Yes, this Rabbi Arthur Schneer is a business associate and friends with both of those families. And don't forget, you know, rabbis are free to get involved in as much business activity as they want. There is no vow of poverty there, guys. Far from it. So, anyway, Amitai Enzioni and his good buddy, Rabbi Schneer, had front row seat tickets to 9/11, yet they were far enough away to ensure their safety. And, you know, you kind of have to wonder, well, you know, how many other powerful Jews
just happened to be in New York City on that fateful day. Kind of like the dancing Israelis who were sent there to document the event. Oh, yeah. And guys, I could do a whole show on this Klaus Schwab guy. It is just fascinating, all the connections this man has. Because I used to wonder, well, you know, how did an academic become a member of the Bilderberg Group? Well, those questions are answered here. And, you know, his organization, the World Economic Forum, that organization is surrounded with very powerful Jewish oligarchs. So Klaus Schwab was born in Ravensburg, Germany in 1938. So he's no spring chicken either. And as it turns out, his father, Gusen Schwab, was a German industrialist. And the company Escher Weiss is the family company, a very large company, and a company that was involved in manufacturing turbines and heavy equipment for the Germans during World War II. And it's interesting how this Jewish industrial family managed to keep their position and their holdings during World War II, when many, you know, less powerful Jews were forced to sell off their companies at that time. So it's interesting how really powerful Jewish industrialists managed to stay in power at that time. A lot of unanswered questions there. And in fact, Schwab's father even worked on the heavy water project and the project to obtain nuclear weapons during World War II. And if you look at Klaus Schwab's Wikipedia page, there's no information whatsoever about any of this. It's all scrubbed. You got to dig deeper to find information about Schwab's real background. And Schwab's grandfather, Gottfried Schwab, moved to Switzerland in 1870. And since that time, the Schwab family has maintained connections with Switzerland. And of course, the World Economic Forum meets in Switzerland, but not this year. They had a virtual meeting this year because of COVID. But isn't it interesting, you know, Schwab and George Soros both were so-called Nazi collaborators. But somehow they pretty much are unscathed by the, what do you call it, the, how do you want to say it, the stigma of being a so-called Nazi collaborator. Very interesting, to say the least. Yeah. Okay, so his grandfather moves to Switzerland, and it turns out that his grandfather, his family, is actually related to the German royal family. That explains a lot, doesn't it, guys? And it explains why Prince Charles is so closely associated with the World Economic Forum, because the English royal family are really from Germany. And it's been said that they have Jewish connections genetically. So it all kind of fits together better, doesn't it now? I used to wonder, why is Prince Charles involved in the World Economic Forum? Well, they're distant cousins. This makes a lot more sense now, doesn't it? So in 1963, Schwab became a mechanical engineer. And in 1965, he went to Zurich and studied to get a PhD in mechanical engineering. And it's unclear if he earned these degrees or if these are honorary degrees. I don't know. because in 1967, he goes to Harvard and gets a PhD in economics from Harvard just 2 years after getting a PhD in mechanical engineering. You cannot earn a PhD in a completely different subject in 2 years. At least most people can't. And guess what, guys? One of his teachers was none other than Henry Kissinger. Oh, yeah. And the two men became very close friends beginning at that time. And, you know, Schwab has received 17 honorary doctorates from all over the world, including the London School of Economics. And honestly, guys, I don't think this man has worked a day in his life. I don't think he's worked a day in his life. He's been too busy engineering the future of the world. He doesn't have time to work. There's no indication this man has done anything other than get honorary degrees and awards and create powerful organizations. And, you know, it's like his life story doesn't make sense until you factor in these elite connections, the royal family connections, and the Jewish connections. Then it all starts to make sense. And, of course, Schwab is associated very closely with the United Nations as well. From 1993 to 95, he was a member of the UN High-Level Advisory Board on Sustainable Development. And then 1996-98, vice chairman of the UN Committee for Development Planning. Oh, yeah, you got to have some UN connections if you're going to be a good globalist. In 1997, he received the Knight of the Legion of Honor of France. Now, what he did to receive any of these awards, I have no idea. In 2001, he received the Candlelight Award from the UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. The Candlelight Award from the UN. Ooh, wow. And Kofi Annan, just by chance, married a Rothschild. Isn't that nice? And then in 2006, Klaus was knighted by Queen Elizabeth. So technically he's a Sir Charles or Klaus Schwab, a knight commander of the Order of St. Michael and St. George. 2012, he receives the Knight Commander's Cross of Germany. 2013, the Grand Cordon of the Rising Sun of Japan. I mean, there's a bunch more of these awards. Here's an interesting one. He received, in 2018, he received the China Reform Friendship Medal, the China Reform Friendship Medal for promoting Chinese economic exchange and cooperation. This guy's got all the right connections, doesn't he? Working with China too, because the Chinese system will become the world system. That's the plan, guys. And he's done a bunch of other awards, and he sat on a bunch of, you know, as a board member for a lot of these big companies who later became members of the World Economic Forum. And as we learned from Hunter Biden, you know, these board member positions are pretty cushy jobs, a quarterly meeting, and you get 50 grand a month. That's what Hunter got. I'm sure Klaus probably got an even better deal. So in 1970, he worked with the European Commission to set up the European Management Symposium. The European Management Symposium, the predecessor to the World Economic Forum. And he helped form the European Union. And of course, now Europe is ruled by unelected technocrats.
And then 1971 was the first meeting of the European Symposium, which invited industrialists, academics, and politicians to all come together and create a technocratic scheme to rule things. And of course, the ideas for this European Symposium, which is the predecessor, they just renamed it the World Economic Forum later. These ideas came directly from Henry Kissinger. And it's been said by many that Henry Kissinger was essentially a valet for the Rockefeller family, or the Rockenfelder family. That's their real name. Yeah. And, you know, another organization that has interlocking membership with the World Economic Forum is the Club of Rome. And guess what, guys? The Club of Rome first met at a Rockefeller estate in 1968. And it's been said that all roads lead to Rome, but you could also say that all roads lead to the Rockefellers, or the Rockenfelders and the Rothschilds. Trilateral Commission, World Economic Forum, Club of Rome, Agenda 2030, just a few things that the Rockefellers have their claws into. So in 1972, you know, the Club of Rome publishes a book called Limits to Growth, Limits to Growth. And it called for the world to be broken up into 10 interconnected zones. And of course, just by chance, you know, there's 10 FEMA zones in the United States. And that's because these same people are making all of these plans. And the World Economic Forum and the Club of Rome, they have the exact same agenda. In 1991, they had a book published called The First Industrial Revolution. And of course, Klaus Schwab's famous book is The Fourth Industrial Revolution, just by chance. And in this book in 1991, The First Global Revolution, it called for a world government. And it said that their ideas, the ideas for world government, could only catch on with the general public if they could unite the world against a common enemy, an existential enemy. And this enemy was pollution and climate change. And of course, the conclusion of the book is that mankind's activity on Earth is the enemy. Mankind is the enemy. And we can see very easily how COVID fits directly into this plan, can't we? Uniting the world against an existential enemy. Yes, and now that enemy is COVID, and every man and every woman is a possible carrier of this virus. So we are all the enemy, aren't we? And of course, climate change and COVID are the same agenda. And it's all being pushed by the same little tribe of people and organizations that all have interlocking membership. Yeah. So there's some food for thought, guys, about the kosher puzzle we're all putting together. And again, I'm not picking on the Jews. I'm just going where the evidence leads me. And that said, I would like to introduce my co-host and my main man, Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, man, how are you? How's it going?
I'm living the dream, bro. What's wrong with picking on the Jews? After all, they're pathological liars. They are like a cancer on this country. And everybody, oh, they're such victims of the Holocaust. Oh, the Holocaust. So you damn well better start picking on them, because if the average shithead doesn't wake up and see who the synagogue of Satan really is and what they're doing to express lane destroy this country, all is lost. People like us cannot win this battle. You have to have the MAGA-tards wake up and see who their real enemy is. Then we might have a shot.
Yeah, good point. Good point. And isn't it interesting that Amitai Enzioni and Klaus Schwab are both German-born Jews? And isn't it interesting this treachery and this Amitai Enzioni, part of a secret underground Jewish army just waiting to strike and take everything away from the Palestinians? And of course, what's the little motto of the World Economic Forum? You will own nothing and you will be happy. So in other words, we're going to take everything from you.
That's just it, man. They're literally a parasite. That is just the fact. And they have bled this country basically dry. And now they're trying to set up a scenario where the Goyim cattle are inoculated and experimented on with this lunacy of genetic modification, which is a dual-pronged attack of eugenics. So it'll kill a lot of people, especially the elderly. And then it'll mutate the others, because let's see what we can come up with to make these cattle more useful. They're going to be chipped, because the beginning, as many know, of this injection, this is just the beginning, that subhuman Gates has got patents for nanotechnology that track you, and when you introduce genetic modification in your system that proves you're vaccinated, when they shine a certain frequency light on you, your hand will light up, the mark of the beast. This is not, you'd think this is all made up, but it's true. You can look up the patent, which is 60606. Somebody has a real sense of humor there at the patent office. Well, and so essentially, what is so pathetic is just how the American exceptionalism, in my opinion, is how exceptionally stupid and self-deluded most Americans are, that they're played. They're that America. The average MAGA-tard or the average libtard is that classic person in a bar who talks loud, thinks they're super bright and super charming, and wants everybody to see them, right? That's what we're dealing with right now. And it's just embarrassing to week after week we speak these truths, wake up, wake up, wake up, and how few wake up.
Yeah. And, in the chat room in Revolution Radio, Michael Donahay is saying that Rabbi Snowman did Prince Charles' circumcision. That's interesting.
Did he use a magnifying glass? That's funny. Yeah, it's funny. The thing that makes me laugh about these, that every Jew is the smartest Jew there ever was. And a couple years ago, when that doughy, propped up boob Kagan became the dean of Harvard Law, and then when she was going through her Supreme Court hearing, all these ass-licking senators were, well, we know that Jews are smarter than the rest of us, Miss Kagan, but... And then she was like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. It's just so sickening. And it's just, it's just goes back, Eustace Mullins, all the way back to the Babylonian Talmudic death cult. And then it was the Phoenicians, the Canaanites, the Hidden Hand, blah, blah, blah. And now today it's I don't know what you want to call it today, the Rothschild criminal cabal or what have you, but there's somebody behind the Rothschilds, I believe. So,
yeah, I've heard it said that the families that are above the Rothschilds, you just don't hear their names.
Right.
And, I've heard some theories about who they are, but, we know that this is a kosher conspiracy to some degree. And you can see how the organization of this works. These Jewish oligarchs recruit, Goyim heads of companies and so on and so forth, and sort of give them membership into the club. so to speak.
Right. That's just it. The Shabbos Goy, right? It's classic. The well-rewarded, loyal lapdogs who will do whatever is told. And, you know, it's interesting that you see the German industrialists, and we're all infected with the lies of the Jew when it comes to Germany, because, you know, there were supposedly as many as 20% of Jews in the German military hierarchy, the Reich hierarchy. So you really can't believe what you're told about a lot of this stuff. There must have been some type of differentiator whereby the industrialist fascist Jews were left alone and the communist radical Jews were singled out. That has to be what really happened.
It's something like that, because there's no question certain, you know, Jewish families pretty much just walked between the raindrops and weren't forced to sell off any of their assets to non-Jews. And, you know, this Schwab's father, you know, this guy was, you know, working with the Germans on, you know, the most top secret program, which is trying to get nuclear weapons. And incidentally, it's very interesting that part of this whole green agenda is going to be nuclear power. And of course here, yeah, we have Schwab's family deeply involved in nuclear research. That I didn't go into it all, but this company that their family owns is into, you know, nuclear research, building nuclear power plants, building, you know, equipment for nuclear power plants. And the idea that nuclear power is green is just, you can't get much more insane than that.
Yep. That is literally the classic inversion of the synagogue of Satan, and nuclear power is just so toxic and so an inch away from monumental disaster there. But there's way more efficient strategies that could be used with nature, right? Like turning all kinds of running water into power, turning there's pragmatic solutions that are never fully implemented, and because of the control of these satanic elites.
It's interesting too how we're seeing the devastating effect of this so-called green agenda in Texas right now, where when all the, you know, essentially what happened is all the windmills froze up from this cold weather, and I mean, this is the most boondoggle, system ever invented. These windmills don't even work half the time. And, I just learned recently, they don't last very long. They only last about 5 years. Then they have to be dumped into a landfill. You can't recycle them.
Unreal. Well, I know for a fact that the whole blade system is pretty silly, that if you really applied proper environmental engineering, they should look more like, you know, an egg beater kind of thing, where it spins up into itself. It's far more efficient and delivers a greater power for less kinetic energy and all that. So it's, you know, it's just funny that these things are sabotaged by the industries who are in competition with the new energy type thing. So there, you know, I mean, look at the dude who was about to roll out the water engine that could drive a car, and he got poisoned at a Cracker Barrel, not at a Cracker Barrel.
And did it really happen at a Cracker Barrel? I didn't know that.
It surely did. It surely did. He drank his juice and he jumped up and he said, "I've been poisoned," and he ran out the door and died in the parking lot.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. And I was just blown away by Amitai Enzioni's, a.k.a. Warner Falk, his actual background. And, you know, just think, you know, the Palestinians, you know, allowed, of course it was under British control, but these Jews were allowed to come into Palestine, and the whole time they were just plotting and waiting, biding their time until the right moment when the order was given to just pretty much take everything from these people, take their country, their culture, everything, and reduce them to slaves. And that's what they did.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it's really funny how the average human is conditioned to seek false leadership and believe in false religion and just you know, not think for themselves like we and the listeners. Anyone who listens to this has got to be somewhat of a free thinker. And instead, you know, that what a great intro you had with I don't wear this mask for me. I wear this mask for you, bro. Let's hug it up. Oh, real men can cry. It's like, it's so stupid and so phony, and yet it's so easily effective on these weak minds, these weak spirits, these weak souls. I mean, it's just really tragic to me that anyone with, third grade education should be able to look and see the history of how masks are bad. And you do 10 minutes of search on a non-Google search engine, and you realize that Fauci himself came out and said multiple times that more people died from wearing masks than were dead from the Spanish flu in 1919. And in one of the papers where Fauci put his name on, he never writes the papers, he just puts his name on, like Gates, never does the work, never creates the technology or the innovations. He just puts his name on it. And Fauci, on this one paper, it was very stirring. The paper said, those who did not wear masks buried those who wore masks. And I'm like, ding, 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 ding. And yet today, you see these people outside, these little children playing and wearing masks. It's like, well, I guess if you're dumb enough to vaccinate your children, you're surely dumb enough to have them wear masks and believe the line of shit you're being fed.
Well, it's amazing. They're getting people to kill themselves. No one's forcing you really to wear a mask or to get a vaccine. And, you know, I thought Nikki made such a great point last night where this COVID thing is really the coming out party for communitarianism. And it's so true. And one thing that's so interesting about this communitarianism idea is that it's very subtle and hidden to some degree. But once you see it, you see this kind of thinking being introduced on all fronts. And, you know, this idea of masking and my mask protects you and your mask protects me and doing it out of respect. This is all communitarian thinking. And, you know, the other day, a mechanic posted a video of himself basically getting on a bus without a mask and as a protest. And what was so disturbing to me is how all the other Goyim cattle slaves turned against him, and he was the bad guy. He was the big jerk for not wearing a mask. And you can see this slave hive mind taking over with the idea, hey, we all wear masks. You got to wear a mask too, man.
Well, exactly. Well stated. The sad fact is the Common Core education, even before that, going back to Carnegie and Rockefeller saying, I don't want a nation of thinkers. I want a nation of workers. Essentially, over a century now, the average American has been taken to a certain prepubescent level where they don't think for themselves. They look to leaders and experts to think for them and to tell them what to think. And if that isn't the truth with the MAGAtards and the shitlibs, I mean, those are the two great herds of delusion right now. And both of them are just such fools. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up John D. Rockefeller, because, you know, he was also sort of the first one to bring this philanthropic model to America, you know, where you know, you loot, pillage, and steal, kill people to become a billionaire, and then you all of a sudden you're a philanthropist and you're working for good. And of course, he used to give out dimes to people during, you know, the Great Depression and things like that. And that's how he turned his image around.
you got to go back and point out that he was so despised because he was such a subhuman parasite that, and then he hired Bernays to turn it around for him. And Bernays had all the, because people were so dirt poor that the fact that this weird looking demonic subhuman Rockefeller, his, it looked like he's a walking dead with his gaunt leathery skin and all that, because he should have already been dead, but whatever deal he made with his demon kept him going. And he'd be giving these little kids these dimes and these people, and a dime could, you know, buy you a meal or what have you then. And the boobs of the day were like, oh wow, this guy, even though he screwed us all, I guess he gave little Timmy a dime, so he's okay. He's a good guy now. I mean, what weak flipping minds. I'm sick of it. So sick of it. Believing the lies of television, believing the gaslighting from the various cabals of big media, big oil, big medicine, big chemical, big pharma, all of them do nothing but lie to you and say, trust us, though. Just trust us. It's
God, trust the experts. We know what's best for you.
Trust the plan. And,
well said about John D. Rockefeller. I mean, the man really did look reptilian. I mean, he was scary looking, actually. And you're right. Freaky, he was completely scary. Despised.
Yeah. And so who's taken... There's nothing new in the world. You just recycle what somebody else's good idea, basically. Look at what that dirtbag devil Bill Gates has done, wearing the same sweater, right? Rockefeller started wearing sweaters and stuff, too, and softened his image. And now Gates has moved everything into this philanthropy, which is such a scam to dodge taxes, give you far more flexibility with your scheming and your machinations with your money, and you can get away with all this stuff. And look at Gates is in a decade as the front man for the globalist parasites has created this vaccine empire. And who the hell is this shithead? Not a doctor, not an engineer, not a biologist, not a virologist, not a epidemiologist, but he's telling us every day on TV what we should do and what how many shots we need. It's like, how can you be so goddamn stupid to listen what that narcissistic piece of shit has to say? It's just with the messianic complex. It's just
unbelievable. Oh yeah, and what's really disgusting is when he's interviewed by these mainstream media lackeys, they just kiss his ass and his feet and his ring. I mean, they're just in awe at his greatness. It's so absolutely disgusting. And Giuseppe, I just heard a few days ago that Gates recently bought a $640 million mega super yacht. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't. Not surprising. Yeah.
Okay, well, guys, stay tuned. We already burned through the first hour. Hour number two is E. Michael Jones, an expert on Jewish oligarchy, among other things. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. And in this hour, we're going to be talking with E. Michael Jones, a man who has some incredible intellect, I believe, and has written many books. We'll have to see how many he wrote. And the creator and editor-in-chief of Culture Wars. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. How many books have you written, Michael?
Well, it depends on what constitutes a book. E-books were invented in the middle of my career. So if you put e-books in normal books, it's like around 40. If you put, it's probably half of that much if you do just paper books.
Wow. Well, you know, two of my favorite books of yours are The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Barren Metal. And, you know, Barren Metal is such a tome. It's a masterwork in many ways. And, you know, it took me months to read that book. How long did that take you to write? And what was your inspiration for beginning that book?
First of all, the first inspiration was the financial crash of 2008. The second inspiration was the Jewish revolutionary spirit. This is the sequel to the Jewish revolutionary spirit. By the way, the second edition of the Jewish revolutionary spirit will be coming out by the end of March. But why did I say that? The Jewish revolutionary spirit, there's a passage in there where we talk about Heinrich Heine. Balzac is a great French novelist. He's walking down the street in Paris, and there is Heinrich Heine arm in arm with James Rothschild. Heinrich Heine is a German revolutionary, German-Jewish revolutionary. Rothschild is obviously the scion of the famous banking family. And the two of them together make up the Jewish spirit. So Balzac says, voilà, tout l'esprit juif. So you need both of them to understand how things work. So in our day, you could transpose that to, let's say, George Soros and Antifa. Okay. George Soros and Black Lives Matter. George Soros is the rich Jew who provides the money for the revolutionaries on the street, and they're the ones that go and try and tear down your society so that the rich Jews can move in and take over. That's the story of what happened here last year. Let's be honest about it, that we had a color revolution in the United States, and these folks took over. It's that simple.
Yeah, that's true. That really is true. And, you know, I've heard this process described as the purification of the oligarchy that's happened under COVID, you know, and I think there's a lot to say for that point of view.
Yeah, COVID was their weapon. It was completely weaponized. Whether there was, I think it was, first of all, created as a weapon in a lab in China and either escaped accidentally or was released on purpose. But the purpose of it was to shut down normal life and more specifically to deny Donald Trump election. And the means they used to do that was mail-in ballots. You know, nobody can go to the polls. We're all going to die of COVID. So mail in those ballots and then it's the easiest way to cheat in the election. And that's what they did. And now we're left trying to put the pieces together, trying to figure out what happened in light of a massive propaganda barrage on the part of mainstream media that is suppressing everything. Can't talk about COVID. Can't talk about the transgendered guy who is now going to tell us how to be healthy after taking hormones and having self-mutilated. Can't talk about it. Sorry. So this is why I'm glad that we're here and we can talk about it.
Yeah, what a hideous creature that guy is, and the idea that this creature holds any kind of power in our society shows you the very sick level that our society is operating at right now.
Right. This guy who thinks he's a woman, this fat Jew who thinks he's a girl. is the symbol of what they believe. You can be anything you want. You can be anything you want. The sky's the limit. And when you act on it, you end up creating, you turn yourself into a monster, into a freak, because you're denying Logos when you do that. You're a creature of Logos. You were made according to a certain plan. And when you violate that plan, you end up being a freak, a lusus naturae, freak of nature. Except this freak of unnature.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I wanted to ask you this last time. How long did it take you to write Barren Metal? And by the way, I really like the cover of that book, The Rats Around the Cheese.
No, wait a minute. That's gold. And that goes back to – so the answer to your first question.
Oh, yeah, it is gold.
It took me about 4 years. It took me about 4 years to write it. But to answer your first okay. – the other question is – those rats are standing on gold coins. And this goes back to a statement of Aristotle. Aristotle said money is sterile. That's why I call the book Barren Metal. Okay, that's what Shakespeare used to talk about money in The Merchant of Venice. And Aquinas, follower of Aristotle, said proof of money, the money is sterile is if you put two rats in a drawer and you come back 6 weeks later, you'll have lots of rats. But if you put two coins in the drawer and you come back, you'll still have two coins. Okay. Now, Shylock didn't believe that, the main character of Merchant of Venice. And he said, my ducats, which is the coin of Venice, my ducats can copulate faster than Laban's ewes and rams. So what he was talking about there was usury. That's the only way your ducats copulate, because those two gold coins, they're not rats and they can't copulate.
Yeah, the magic shekel machine. Yeah, Giuseppe's here, my co-host. Giuseppe, why don't you take it away here?
Dr. Jones, wonderful to have you back. We had so many positive responses for your initial appearance a few weeks ago, months now. I guess it all blurs. But my question for you is, what happened to the integrity of the Catholic Church now that with this one-lunged poser as Pope being part of the New World Order, and the real Catholics like Vigano are at least speaking out, but does Vigano have any real power, and will Vigano be able to drive out the crypto Jews, the conversos who are now controlling the Vatican?
He has no real power because he's not a cardinal. He'll never be a cardinal because of what he's done. And the cardinals are the ones that get to elect the next pope. Okay, so the guy, Wilton Gregory, who was Archbishop of Washington, announced that Donald Trump was not welcome in the Catholic Church. Now, this is unprecedented. Who is not welcome in the Catholic Church? It was created for sinners. Okay, so he says he's not welcome, and he was made a cardinal, so he will be involved in electing the next pope. This is part of the problem here. We have the Jesuits running the Catholic Church right now. The pope is a Jesuit, and what you had over a period of time, let's say beginning with the papacy of John Paul II, you had a kind of convergence of the Catholic Church and the American Empire. Symbolized by Reagan and John Paul II in the war, the anti-communist crusade. And that was blazingly successful, and that was the problem, because then the neocons came to power in both the Catholic Church and the United States of America, and that led to the Iraq War, and suddenly everybody's decided, we don't like this anymore. We don't like America. I watched it happen when I was in Europe. When I was in Poland in 1990, right after the Berlin Wall came down, if they thought you were an American, they'd come run up and kiss your hand. In Germany, I saw the whole thing turn sour because of George Bush and American imperialism. And the Americans took the rap for the Jews. It was the Jews who took over, the neoconservatives who took over the Bush administration and launched that war and so on and so forth. So Ratzinger was the successor of John Paul II. He was his right-hand man when he was head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. And then suddenly, I don't know what happened to this guy, but he's the first pope to resign in like 800 years. What happened there? I have no idea. And you had an unprecedented situation where the whole, if you want to call it those forces, that side of the church, if you want to call it the right wing or the conservative side, suddenly got discredited. And the other side, the left-wing side, saw its chance, and the Zongalin group got this guy elected, and now we're stuck with him. We're stuck with two popes, actually, which is hasn't happened in about 800 years. So that's, if that doesn't explain it, ask me another question, but that's kind of the shorthand version of what happened.
Well, no, it is a very succinct and lucid explanation. I'd like to follow up with the idea of your fine book, Libido Dominandi, The Sexual Liberation and Political Control. And to me, it seems as though the weaponized minorities, the radical lesbian, the radical who's taken hormones to grow a beard, the radical chubby Jew like Dick Levine, who renamed himself Rachel, the radical what would you say, the in your face pornography, you know, everything that is intended to give the illusion of freedom, in my mind, actually becomes like an addiction and enslaves you.
Right.
And so that's leads to the weaponized minorities with these far outlier radicals in power and the decent majority of the Western nations are vilified as racists and domestic terrorists. Can you believe that? I mean, so your thoughts on how are they pulling this off? It's such a mind control operation.
You're right. It's exactly what it was. The subtitle of Libido Dominandi is Sexual Liberationist Political Control. So I wrote that book about 30 years ago, and nobody understood what I was talking about. But it turns out that everybody learned in the expensive school of experience that you can become a slave to your passions. And they learned that through the widespread dissemination of pornography. The biggest dissemination of pornography in human history, enabled by the internet, created a generation, a whole generation of people who were enslaved, and they knew it. So I didn't have to convince them. All I had to do was come up with the explanation, and that's what happened over the fall of 2019. The word got out, and suddenly we had something called NoFap November. So the guys woke up, and they're not going to watch pornography for the month of November. And suddenly that term became part of people's thought. So, yeah, I understand now. Sexual liberation is a form of control. The Jews enslaved us to their pornography. The Jews are behind pornography. The decent people became indecent people because they all watched pornography. And once that happened, they could no longer defend themselves. That was what happened. That's why the Jews did it. They always work to overthrow the majority. And the best way to do it is by moral corruption, because you don't know that you're being overthrown. You think all I want to do is watch those pictures, and you forget that you're being enslaved by it. So that happened, and then a consciousness swept through the world, and it broke down that form of control. And so what you saw after 2019, after the fall of 2019, was more and more completely overt, in-your-face forms of control, to the point now where it's completely preposterous. I'm sorry. But if I can't talk about the COVID virus that's locking me and everyone else down, what can I talk about? What exactly? And why do I have to ask Mr. Zuckerberg for permission to talk about something? Who gave this guy the right to control our speech? Well, exactly. That's how it happened.
Yeah. And Dr. Jones, I really like your term, the gay disco. That's really what they've turned society into. And as you have, you know, a reprobate populace and a populace that doesn't have any kind of moral code, you create a society where it necessitates the need for a police state. And I think those things are no accident.
Right. Well, that's what, as I said, John Adams, the founder of the Republic, said we have no constitution that functions in the absence of a moral people. Well, he was right. If you can't control yourself, you certainly can't control the government. And the whole point of this is, yeah, that's exactly the plan. We'll get you to the point where you can't control yourself, and then we'll control you through your passions. And if that wears off, well, then we'll get overt, because you've destroyed all of the mechanisms of representative government. Or you allow them to be destroyed, because that's what this is really about. This is about the oligarchs destroying representative government. It began in Indiana. I mean, it began a lot longer, though. But in Indiana in 2015, our illustrious former governor Mike Pence passed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which said you couldn't be bullied by homosexuals into baking cakes for their weddings. Well, the oligarchs didn't like that, and so Mark Benioff of Salesforce, he flies in and he says you got to rescind that law. Well, Pence should have said, well, where are you, which part of Indiana do you come from? Oh, you're from San Francisco. Well, who gave you the right to overturn the laws of Indiana? Officer, arrest this man for trying to overthrow the government. He didn't do that. They rolled over and played dead, and it was only until about 5 months later, when the same juggernaut hit North Carolina, that some guy woke up. One of the representatives says, hey, this is an attack on representative government. Well, duh, yeah, it is. And so now we have a situation where Google and Facebook are stronger than government. We don't have a government. We got Google and Facebook. And now Australia woke up to this fact. After Facebook started banning material, Poland woke up about 4 months ago and they passed a law saying you have no right to enforce anything other than the laws of the state of Poland. If you enforce, you deplatform someone for anything else, they can sue you. Well, that law has to be replicated around the entire world. And now Australia seems to be on the verge of doing something about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you know, we have this attack on free speech, but not a mention of this absolute proliferation of pornography that even, you know, children can watch without a problem. Yeah. Just go on the internet and watch
it. Why is it that pornography is not considered hate speech? Well, because the Jews control the term hate speech. It's that simple. And they like pornography for the reasons I've already explained. And they like hate speech because it gets them to basically get rid of anybody they don't like.
Yeah. And just a minute ago, you were talking about how conservatives have been rolling over and playing dead. That's been going on for a long time. What do you attribute that to, that conservatives are just sort of limp-wristed people that are not giving much of a fight against the agenda that we see?
Right, because the libertarians, the only villain for a libertarian was government. So if anybody else did it, it was freedom. If a government does it, it's tyranny. Well, that's really stupid. I mean, it's got to be one of the dumbest ideas in political history. Shows you how dumb that is. That's the cornerstone of conservatism. And suddenly they woke up one day and they realized, wait a minute, it's not government that's taking away my ability to earn a living. It's Google. It's Facebook. They're cutting me off from the internet. That's how I do business. And I don't have any recourse. Where is government when I need it? Well, the conservatives destroyed the idea that government is there to represent the will of the people. That's what happened here. So I think it goes back to John Locke and this notion of the absolute right of private property. Locke was a Whig. His job was to justify the Whig ancestor theft of church property known as the Reformation, the looting operation known as the Reformation. And he said, if you've got it, it's absolutely yours. And that made the Whigs real happy. Well, guess what? That's exactly what happened to Google, Facebook, and all this other type of stuff. It's my operation, and you don't have a damn thing to say about it, and government doesn't know what to do. Like, it's the First Amendment doesn't cover these people. What are we going to do? I don't know what to do. I spent too much time in the libertarian seminar because I forgot that government represents the average person against the rich and the powerful because they don't need any representation. They can buy whatever they want. And that's precisely the issue. You have this notion, this stupid Lockean notion of absolute private property now being used against the people of the entire world by groups like Google and Facebook. And the conservatives, where are they? Have you heard from one lately? Where's Tom Woods? Tom, what's the story here? Is it okay because Google does it and it's a private entity? Please get back to me.
Yeah.
Well said. You know, it's funny. I regularly say, Dr. Jones, that we've migrated from a nation with a government striving imperfectly to serve of the people, by the people, for the people, to now basically a tyranny that serves of the parasites, by the parasites, for the parasites. And not only do we have to suffer under the yoke of the neoconservative, but the ridiculousness of the neoliberal. I mean, when I was a young man in the 70s, liberals were against war. They were, you know, kind of dumb in some of their sexual politics, as we previously discussed. But it seemed like at least their big issue was no war and some type of basic human decency. And now they're like bloodthirsty, drooling. We need more war for Israel. I mean, the takeover of this nation from World War II, the great meme was Uncle Sam. Then with the degeneration of the Vietnam War, the veterans who came back called Uncle Sugar because, you know, we can get these benefits for our suffering. And now I think we toil under Uncle Shlomo. It's crazy.
Well, I think that's the history of that period. That's why I wrote the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. That was my George Bush era book. because I watched the neoconservatives take over American foreign policy and put us in a war. That who wanted this war? Wait a minute. I'm not in agreement with this. Didn't matter. Okay, if the Jews wanted it, if the Israel lobby wanted it, then Bush just jumped and saluted and went, the country went to war. That's precisely what happened. You can't understand what happened in this country from World War II to the present until you understand how the Jewish minority replaced the WASP elite ruling class that ruled this country during World War II and well into the 60s. The turning point, in my humble opinion, came in 1978. Okay, this is 2 years after Woody Allen appears on the cover of Time magazine as an American genius. Oh, I thought he was Jewish. But anyway, 78 is also the year that Nelson Rockefeller and John D. Rockefeller died. They both died in that year, and there was a changing of the guard. And the war in Iraq is just one symptom of basically the Jewish takeover. Now, those of us who voted for Donald Trump voted for America first, and we got an Israel first foreign policy. And then Biden comes in, and you think, well, that's going to be the opposite. Well, no, I guess not, because the Jerusalem Post says there are enough Jews in Biden's cabinet to have a minion. They can have a prayer service. They have so many Jews there. But if I say that, I'm called an anti-Semite. Okay, so the more things change, the more they're the same. And what you see is, well, I guess it's not going to change. So what is Biden? Yeah, Biden, the first day in office, overturns all of these rulings of Donald Trump. You know, abortion, we're going to all the money you want. You guys are great. Oh, wait a minute. What about the JCPOA? What about the nuclear agreement with Iran? Well, wait a minute. We have to take that a little more slow. Well, why is that? Well, because the Jews control this administration, too. That's the problem.
Yeah, and it's funny how one of the foundations of so-called conservatism is an undying devotion to Israel somehow, which never has made much sense to me. And, you know, Dr. Jones, in the first hour of the show, I kind of did some digging into, you know, Klaus Schwab, who turns out to be a German Jew. And just incidentally, you know, he was on 9/11 in 2001. On that fateful day, he was at a synagogue in New York City having breakfast with Rabbi Arthur Schneer, the former head of the World Jewish Congress and an associate of the Bronfman family and the Lauder family. And it seems to me that Klaus Schwab is sort of what he's done with the World Economic Forum is he's organized the oligarchy into a unified agenda. And so maybe you could comment about on Klaus Schwab and this oligarchy that seems to be materializing.
Yeah. The playbook here, you can find it in the Shock Doctrine by Naomi Weiss, where basically they orchestrate catastrophic events, and then when everybody is just shocked and reeling and wondering what happened, they come in and they make all the changes they want. It happens over and over and over again. 9/11, classic example. We get the Patriot Act, and nobody read it, but we got to pass it because, damn it, they blew up those two buildings. And if you don't pass it, you're not a patriot. Well, it happens all the time. And now they're using the COVID crisis as a way of disguising their crisis, which is a worldwide rebellion against the oligarchs. And I'm saying worldwide. And
without a doubt.
One of the biggest, the most significant events that nobody's talking about is the farmer revolt in India right now. First of all, India is important because there are a lot of those people. You know, there's more than a billion of those people there. And the farmers are protesting the changes in the agriculture laws, which is they're important because we all have to eat. And so what you got is a completely corrupt guy in charge of India by the name of Narendra Modi, who is playing a double game there where if for the Indians, he's a flaming Hindu nationalist that is behind an organization backing them called the RSS, whose words I don't remember. But these are people that will go out and murder Catholic nuns. They'll murder Muslims if they think they ate a cow, this type of stuff. And Modi will say nothing about this because this is how he keeps the domestic population under control. He just passed a law recently that basically disenfranchised India's Muslims, which is a lot of people. Okay, now that's the domestic side. Now, the foreign policy side is the exact opposite. He licks the boots of the oligarchs on the foreign policy end. So he's got the best of both worlds. You know, he's the man in the middle who cuts the deal, and the main deal that he cuts is cheap labor. His job is to make India the cheap labor capital of the world. Okay, now that is a self-defeating program. And the best way to see that has been cheap labor garment industry in India. India is the leading, it is the leading producer of cheap cloth in the world. And so I know people involved in the garment industry in India. This is like what they're telling me from the inside. They would come here to New York and they'd take orders from, you know, Gap, Forever 21, American Eagle, Banana Republic, all the middle realm clothing retailers. And then they go back and they pay the poor Indian tailors, you know, 50 cents a day or whatever. They cheap. And the middleman made all the money. And we ended up being flooded with cheap clothes. And, hey, it's a good deal, except that after a while, when nobody produces anything in this country, guess what? You don't have any money to buy anything but Old Navy. Old Navy is the only retailer left standing because it's the cheapest junk out there. And this is the race to the bottom. So guess what? My Indian friend shows up in New York, and guess what? Nobody's placing orders because they all went out of business. All those places are out of business now because there's no, in a sense, no clothing middle class anymore. Everybody's going to Old Navy and buying T-shirts. That's the essence of this self-defeating policy that keeps Indians poor and ruins the economy over here too.
Well stated. Now, in the District of Criminals General area, know many Catholics. I was raised a Catholic as well, and it's interesting that they have a very warm communal church. I mean, I've been to several and interacted. Our neighbors, we moved into a neighborhood that's heavy Catholic, and they're all really good people. They what's it going to take for these people to wake up and kind of band together and save their level of societal existence?
All right, they have to. You're talking about American Catholics now. Yes. And American Catholics, they came over here, were immigrants. You come over from Europe, you have chances here, opportunities that you didn't have in Europe, and you become grateful. And you really want to succeed in this country because these guys are real. These are cool guys. And I'm talking about, let's say, F. Scott Fitzgerald now and the Great Gatsby. F. Scott Fitzgerald was a Catholic boy from St. Paul, Minnesota, and he got to go to Princeton at the high watermark of WASP culture. And these guys were cool. I still like the way they dress. You know, Princeton's a cool place. And so I want to become an American. Well, that infected the entire church, and they were willing to compromise the faith. And Pope Leo XIII woke up to it at one point, and he says, this is a heresy called Testem Benevolentiae. He said, it's the heresy of Americanism. Well, that was the problem. You had all of these people who wanted to be, they were more interested in being American than they were Catholic. And the government was willing to go along with this and delude them that they had some type of say at the same time that they're wrecking the basis of their culture. And that's the book I wrote called The Slaughter of Cities, Urban Renewal as Ethnic Cleansing. So the first of all, and then thanks to places like Notre Dame and Father Hesburgh, the Catholics had their higher education institutions stolen from them. Hesburgh is one of the biggest thieves in American history. And so as a result, they were decapitated. So I started off, I thought I was going to be a professor at a Catholic college. And I got there and I got fired for being against abortion. And I thought, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
And that's why I got out of academe. The best decision I ever made in my life. And so they lost their history. They lost their identity. The Catholics are a victim of identity theft. And they were conquered. They're a conquered people. And so until they wake up and realize what really happened to them by reading books like Slaughter of Cities, and you find out, well, now I know why I'm in the suburbs and why I grew up in the suburbs and not in that nice ethnic neighborhood that they filmed in The Godfather. Now I know that. That's got to happen here, and they've got to. We have to reject this Americanism that is manifested now in people like Joe Biden and Wilton Gregory. This is Americanism of the worst and crudest and most repulsive sort. And it's got that. If you didn't understand it till now, you better understand it now. The Jesuits in New York City, America Magazine, their magazine is called America. Well, guess what that means? They are Americanists to the man, which means now it, America, being a good American means going to the gay disco. And and James Martin, SJ, can show you the way to the disco. And he can teach you a few dance steps at the disco, too. That's why we're in the mess we're in. We Catholics, I mean.
Yeah, and there's no way to decouple Western civilization from Christianity and the Catholic Church. You really can't do it. No. Yet somehow we're in a situation now where the basic moral code that guided Western civilization is being tossed aside.
Absolutely. You're right. That's why I wrote Logos Rising, A History of Ultimate Reality. You can, the cutting edge of Logos in human history is the Catholic Church as of the time of Jesus Christ. Everybody howls when I say that. I can imagine what the comment box is going to be saying right now. But it's true. And if you don't believe me, read Logos Rising. And if you're still not after that, you can ask me a question, because that is the cutting edge of Logos. And we have to get back to Logos. And that means the church is going to have to make some course corrections. And the main course correction the church is going to have to make is we have to get back to the traditional Catholic teaching on the Jews. This Catholic-Jewish dialogue was the biggest mistake in the history of the Catholic Church. It has wrecked the Catholic Church because it makes you pretend that you don't have any enemy. The church doesn't have any enemies. The traditional enemy of the gospel simply disappears. And anybody who brings it up and says, well, wait a minute, aren't the Jews behind gay marriage? Amy Dean said that in the Jewish. No, you're an anti-Semite if you say that. We cannot get forward. We cannot proceed with that type of attitude in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
I mean, look at
just to make one other point. That is why the Catholic Church has lost every single battle in the culture wars since 1965, which is when this whole Catholic Jewish dialogue failed experiment came into existence.
Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it's factual that a bitter man named Cyrus Schofield was hired by Samuel Untmeyer in service to the Rothschild banking cabal and rewrote the Bible, the Schofield Bible, to which has led to the idea that the Jew is the chosen people, when in reality that is only the case in their mind, and all of a sudden, you know, it's led to these evangelical Christian Zionists, which to me is such an oxymoron.
Right.
It's hard to believe the Absolutely. Level of stupidity there. And you're so what are your thoughts on that?
You're absolutely right. That is the biggest crisis among evangelical Christians. They're all Christian Zionists. They have commissars appointed to rule over them and make sure they never leave the Christian Zionist reservation. And the main intellectual underpinning of that is the Schofield Bible, which is completely heretical, completely nonsensical. But it's taught in all these, it's taught in all these churches, these independent churches, evangelical churches. This is what Mike Pence started out life as a Catholic. And then he had 90% of his brain removed. And then he became a Christian Zionist. And that's what he is today. Because that's the power down in southern Indiana. Those are the people that rule the roost down there. That just as I said, what I said about the Catholic Church is true. They've got to get back to the traditional teaching of the church. And my evangelical brothers have got to repudiate this Schofield heresy. They got to get back to the gospel. Read the Gospel of St. John once again, fellas, and tell me how that's compatible with the Schofield Bible. It's not.
Yeah, it's
great
just
point.
We live in a time of madness where up is down, black is white, hot is cold. It's so many inversions. The classic technique of the synagogue of Satan is inverting everything and making us the evil and they the perpetual victim. It's such a tired scheme, and it's so obvious to me, you, most of our listeners, and yet to the average person, oh, you're an anti-Semite, oh, you're a racist, oh, you're a homophobe. Well, not really. I mean,
yeah.
I'm just trying to point out truths.
I've been called an anti-Semite for about, at least 12 years now since the Jewish revolutionary spirit came out. You can't argue with this word. You simply cannot do it. So what I'm telling you is the antidote to the accusation of you're an anti-Semite. You simply say, is it a sin to criticize Jews? Let's just cut to the chase here. If it's a sin, I don't want to commit. I don't want to commit a sin because, that's the wrong thing to do. So you tell me, is it a sin to commit to criticize Jews? Yes or no? No? Okay. It's not a sin. Okay. You don't like it, but it's not a sin. So you're just going to have to put up with it. Okay. If they say yes, then you say, well, didn't Jesus Christ criticize Jews? Didn't Moses criticize Jews? Is Moses an anti-Semite? And who made up this rule that there's one group that is above any criticism? Because that's what we're talking about. Anytime a Jew doesn't like what you say, he calls you an anti-Semite. And that term, he will use that term to wreck your career, deny you a livelihood, and all sorts of other bad things. And this is intolerable. This is not American. This is anti-American thinking, and it's wrong. And we have to stand up to it. Because if we don't, there's no limit. The ADL issues the list. We're going to ban all those people. They ban them, and now we're up to the COVID people. Anybody who disagrees with the oligarchs on COVID, what's it going to be next year? Anybody who makes fun of Rachel Levine is going to lose his job? I mean, where's it going to end? It's not going to end because these are people who don't understand logos, and logos means limit. There's no limit here. It's going to get worse until we all start standing up to it.
Well, yeah, it seems to be open rebellion against the fundamental teachings of Christ and the fundamentals of Western civilization.
Right.
And it's not going to end well.
Right. Is it anti-Semitic to say that Richard Levine or Rachel Levine is a fat Jew who thinks he's a woman? Is that anti-Semitic?
I mean, it's a fact. It's a fact.
Well, yeah. Suppose you said he was a fat, ugly Jew who thinks he's a woman. Well, why can't we say that? What's wrong with saying that? Secondly, why are you imposing this guy on us as some type of ruler who's going to tell us about health? I mean, this guy shoots himself up with hormones. God knows what happened below the belt there. I don't even want to go into that. Okay? And this guy's going to tell me how to be healthy? This is ridiculous.
Well, and just a quick glance at this creature, to me, it's very clear that this individual is mentally ill.
Right. And you're not only you're doing people a disservice when they come into you and say, look, I think I'm a woman. And you're supposed to say, well, look, let's talk about this. I know you've got a problem. Let's talk through your problem. No, I got to. Okay. Yeah. You think you're a woman? Well, good. I'll charge you a lot of money and I'll mutilate your body and make your life miserable. And I'll make out better than if I told you to go back and try and work out your problem psychologically. That's what's going on here. Yeah. The other irony here is you let these people do whatever they want, and they turn themselves into freaks. Well, we're not doing these people any favors, okay? We're not doing them any favors by allowing them to mutilate themselves according to their psychopathological illusions.
That's true. And, the suicide rate amongst so-called transgender is actually very high. And that's many right. of them actually end up regretting what they did.
That's right.
And it's tragic. It really is.
It's tragic.
And, Michael, I know you said you had to go at quarter till. So yes. I just want to ask you, what's the best way for people to subscribe to Culture Wars and gain access to buying your books?
Just go to culturewars.com. And all the magazine, you can subscribe. You can go to buy all the books. They're all available there at culturewars.com.
Okay, and what have you been working on there with Culture Wars this recently?
We got all kinds of stuff going on here. One of the chapters that's going to appear in the new edition of Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, that will appear in the March issue. We've done, it's like the middle, okay? It's between like a 1,400-page book and a tweet. You know, and there's a lot of middle ground in there. And that's the type of stuff we cover in Culture Wars every month. You know, you can't – there's no point in competing with headlines. You can't do that. You take a step back and you try and deal with the issues. All of those – all of these books started off as articles in Culture Wars magazine. So this is where you can get in on the ground floor with the ideas. And you can talk about, you know, with people in the letters column. And it's been going on for 40 years now. So God willing, it will continue.
Wow. Giuseppe, final thoughts or question for Dr. Jones before we have to let him go.
Oh, thank you again for joining the show. Hopefully we can get you back in the near future. And in my mind, the American Catholicism was at its high point back in the mid-20th century when you had crusaders like Father Coughlin and really trying to champion a populist movement that champion decent Catholics and decent ethnic reality of real neighborhoods. And do you think we'll ever see that type of activism again?
No, it will activism. Yeah, we'll see activism. You can never go back. You can only go forward, and you can only reach a higher level than you had before through suffering. That's the point of the cross. That is the point of Hegelian dialectic. That's the meaning of history. You know, you have this state, it's a nice state, and then suddenly catastrophe, and then you have a higher state. So you begin in the Garden of Eden, and then you have the fall, and then you have the Jesus Christ, the Savior, comes. That's going to happen in America in some way that we can't predict at the moment.
Excellent. Right. Well, Dr. Jones, thanks so much for coming on the show, and hopefully we can get you to come back on in the next month or so, 6 weeks or something like that.
Yes, I'd be happy to. Thank you. Thank you for a
okay.
great
– thanks again. Thank you, sir. And you take care, sir.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Well, he's such a fascinating guy.
Brilliant mind.
Yep. And it's interesting. I respect people who choose a certain foundational platform for their work, right? So he's a devout Catholic. He believes in Catholicism. And everything that he does to fight the evil of the synagogue of Satan and the parasites that infect the cancer that infects his country, it's through that foundation. And more people need a bedrock like that, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and as I said earlier, you know, no matter what your religious beliefs are, you really cannot decouple Western civilization from the Catholic Church and Christianity. You just can't do it if you're going to be intellectually honest in terms of a sort of a guide for behavior since the dawn of Western civilization. You just the two cannot be decoupled.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we didn't get a chance to get into the fact that the synagogue of Satan and the criminal cabals like Big Agra poisoning people with soy, which is a total endocrine disruptor and gives so much estrogen to males, the big chemical just poisoning the environment and exposing bisphenol A and lining cans of soup and plastic water bottles. So literally an intentional effort to feminize weak males, to turn them into these urges they have. Those are real urges to these lowlifes. They've literally been poisoned, and they don't understand that they've been poisoned by a satanic elite. Instead, they just think, oh, it's just my calling to be a woman. It's my gender's fluid. It's like, well, You know, back in the day, cosmic rays hit a pregnant woman, and there's always been, you know, more than just two genders. That dates back to all the indigenous people, and I understand that. But to let these weaponized minorities rule the day is just so beyond the pale in my mind.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Dr. Jones made a good point, too, where, you know, some people are confused, and we need to show compassion and try to help people. But to put them up on a pedestal and to expose young children to this kind of deviant thinking is absolutely criminal. It's child abuse. And, you know, of course, children are very impressionable. And you can get a child to believe almost anything. And they're actually telling little kids, hey, you can choose your gender, man. You know, do you identify as a little girl, Johnny? What do you think? And this is criminal. And it's, you can see it's really an effort to destroy our civilization and to make people better slaves and easier to conquer, essentially.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, this is the new state religion is narcissism. And so if you look at that and you look at the millions of weak-minded, weak-willed, weak-spirited individuals who care so much what the celebrity tells them and wants to be their own social media influencer, it's like, what a cesspool, what a bubbling, percolating cesspool it all is.
Yeah, no doubt, man. And, you know, I wanted to, next time we have Dr. Jones on, I want to ask him about, you know, the relationship between Catholicism and Freemasonry, because I think it wasn't until the 1980s when you could not be a Catholic in good standing and a Freemason. It was in the 1980s, wasn't it? Is that correct?
Oh, when I was growing up in the church with going to Catholic school, it was absolutely, man. We had lessons. Freemasons, that's the devil. Yeah, so I'm not kidding you. In the 60s,
oh yeah,
you know, I started Catholic kindergarten in 64. And that was, they did teach that. I recall absolutely, you know, they were like, this symbol is evil. It's the symbol of the devil. Yeah, it's wild.
Well, and the enmity goes way, way back to the Knights Templar and, you know, the Jacques Millet being burned at the stake. And I'm just curious. I want to ask him what happened in the 1980s that suddenly reversed all that? Interesting.
Oh, I can tell you what he would tell you. The crypto Jew, the converso, they got in there and started climbing the hierarchical ranks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything's good to go now.
Well, and, you know, I always have thought that Nancy Pelosi is a converso because, you know, her father, the former governor of Maryland, had deep and close ties to the Jewish mafia. So not the Italian mafia, you know, so I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm sorry. I was reading the chat. Say it again.
Oh, that Nancy Pelosi is another one of these conversos. And, you know, her father was very closely aligned with the Jewish mafia, you know, in Maryland as governor of Maryland, not the Catholic mafia.
Well, right. I mean, at the big shift from Sicilian Italian power to the Jew power in the mafia was occurring around that time, and especially the big change initially was in New York, and then it spread on the East Coast, and it took longer. The next big base of power shift was in Vegas, and then eventually L.A., and then lastly, the Midwest and Texas.
So. Right. And then, of course, you know, Joe Biden is allegedly a Catholic. But, you know, that all of his children are married to Jews. Did you know that?
I did know that. Hold on. Let me play this real quick. I think I have it set up. Here we go. Joe Biden, the good Catholic.
I'd be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, it is just tragic what has happened to this country. And I don't know. I mean, I still hold out. The only hope for me is if a lot of these weak-minded shitheads, these face diaper-wearing boobs who are taking the shot, if a lot of them die, it's tragic for them and their families, but maybe that'll wake up the remaining people to see this whole synagogue of Satan, house of cards that's built would fall apart. That would be a key thing, you know, and then that would be very rewarding to see Bill Gates hanging from a street lamp somewhere. And that's the only way it's going to change. And it's a long shot at best.
Well, Bill Gates should be extradited to India to face crimes for, you know, crimes against humanity, essentially. And, you know, the thing with the shots, Giuseppe, what I think is going to happen, though, is when those people start dying, they're saying, oh, there's a new strain of COVID, and that vaccine didn't cover it. You need a new vaccine. And I think the only way out is for people to quit trusting the experts and the people that are manufacturing the reality around us. And hopefully that'll happen from what you're saying.
That's exactly right. That's why we do what we do. You know, Zuckerberg, the goof who owns Twitter, I can't think of his name right now, the Jews that control YouTube, they are all going to say that, as well as Fauci, as well as Gates, as well as the corrupt CDC. But there are a lot of heavy hitters. You know, the Sherry Tenpenny, Robert Kennedy Jr., Del Bigtree, week after week, Judy Mikovits, Dr. Barbara Lowe, Dr. Carrie Medej, and Dr. Dolores Cahill, that fella in Germany, Dr. Thomas Binder. They're coming out and they're week after week pointing out what the deadly satanic initiative that is this COVID scamdemic and this new injection. It's not a vaccination. It's an injection to genetically modify the recipient and the beginning of a very dark path for those fools to take that jab. And so there will be a war of gaslighting lies versus truth. And I think that when your normal functional paradigm is shattered by your 20-year-old kid died the day after he got the vaccine, or your husband or wife died, at that point you're going to be more receptive to the truth, not the lies.
Good point. Well said. And we just have a couple minutes here. You know, for the third and final hour, we're going to bring on Casey Whalen, who is an activist in Idaho, and a man I consider to be a friend, and someone that's really put himself on the line, going out and doing real things, you know, boots on the ground kind of stuff. And he's got some great videos on his channel. And so it'll be an interesting conversation to talk with him about what's happening in Idaho.
Yeah. Yeah. I would, especially, I never would have thought, some of the reports I'm seeing about how Idaho government is trying to get with the plan and crack down. Hopefully they can take their state back.
Absolutely. Okay, there's the top of the hour break. So we'll be right back next hour with Casey Whalen. Stay tuned. Okay, welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. I'm here with my co-host, Giuseppe, from the District of Criminals, and we're going to bring on Casey Whalen here in just a few minutes. I'm not seeing him quite ready to come aboard, but in the meantime, me and Giuseppe will just have a conversation. So, Giuseppe, where do you want to take things as we wait for Casey to come on? Oh, there he is. My God. All right. Perfect timing. Casey, good to see you, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. Well, maybe you could just briefly describe your YouTube channel and the kind of activism that you've been involved in up there in Idaho.
Sure. So I started, I woke up quite a few years ago. I was watching, MSNBC, CNN, really, I knew that it was fake, for the most part. But then it came to the point where it was like, why am I watching this anymore? I know it's nonsense. So I stopped watching TV. I stopped watching movies, all that crap, and just focused on what I saw coming down the line, and this was about 9 years ago, I guess. And just felt compelled to try to do something about it. I guess it came to the realization that I didn't want to go to my deathbed. Am I really going to be on my deathbed just saying I didn't try? And I decided that's not going to be the case. So I God really put it to me to try to, just try to shake the trees and just try to bring awareness to our rights. And so about 3 years ago, I started the YouTube channel North Idaho Exposed after another YouTube channel was basically taken down after I got 3 copyright strikes in a row from somebody. And I wasn't making any money off of the videos because I didn't even have 1,000 subscribers. But anyways, so I made a new YouTube channel, and this time I wanted it to be just focusing on rights. It'd have to be more content I produced, which was, it's hard. It's not just make a video. There's a lot of work that goes into this. I'm sure as Giuseppe knows, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. You produce a lot of shows too, Giuseppe. So hats off to you. I know you guys have been getting copyrights or, strikes and all that, and have had to deal with the censorship, as have I and a group that I'm part of. But I tried to email my local sheriff because I knew the sheriff was, the person you need to talk to about making sure that rights are upheld in your county. And it wasn't very fruitful through email. I was a bit starch. I was learning, about the CESCV trusts and all the corporation and all that as far as government's concerned. And so I kind of try to stay away from that now because I could be used against you in a way. But not saying there's no truth to that, because I know Roger Sales is talked about how to get out of the system, essentially. But that could be a pretty dicey topic. So anyways, I emailed my sheriff. It didn't really go anywhere. And in my second email, he said he was going to send it to the FBI, essentially, as far as my question about the gold fringe on the flag.
Wow.
So the law. And so anyways, I started filming the police. A friend of mine, Dave, who runs a YouTube channel called News Now Houston, he's basically known as the grandfather of what's called First Amendment auditing. And that's just basically you're taking your camera out, you're filming the police or government officials going into our buildings and making sure that things are on the up and up, and holding them accountable, maybe just finding out where they don't know maybe they don't know much about their rights. So you're just trying to bring attention to where there may be issues in the community. And I can go on, but essentially it just turned into filming the police at first, public officials going into buildings, like I said, and just drawing attention. I got kind of tired of that because it's kind of like a one trick pony sort of thing. And I wanted to diversify. So I started eventually getting into more journalism, the journalism aspect. A friend of mine ran for Washington, a representative in Washington State and Spokane Valley. He ended up winning his seat, but I ended up helping him produce his YouTube channel for a year. We had access to a TV station, essentially. And so these interviews that he would do, I would help produce. And then I learned a lot about video production, how to mic people, and just really getting into the, taking on the journalism aspect of being a citizen journalist. And it's been extremely rewarding because now people come to me and they want to give me information. They want to, here's some videos, can you make a video on whatever? And then we'll do it, and we'll make a video on something in the community. And I would say, if you're interested in doing this, just do it and learn your rights. I guess it depends on what you want to do, but just stick with maybe what you're comfortable with, and then you'll eventually acquire more skills to your repertoire. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, I guess you could say. But I did start out kind of focusing more nationally, and then I did change to more local. And that does affect, how many people see your channel, but that doesn't matter to me. It's all about community and basically try to set an example and show people how they can stand up and make a difference. And the people, we have the power of optics. And so that's one thing that these government officials, they don't have. They have to follow a certain set of rules and we don't. And so that's very powerful once you kind of get to understand that. And you can sort of try to strategize, okay, here's the problem. How can we make this really, I don't know, maybe viral in the community or really draw attention to it? And as you work and gain friends and contacts, it becomes even more powerful. And then actually having the local media, I sometimes have forced the local media to report on a certain topic. And that's not all bad because they are, for instance, they'll give you credit and then people locally will find out about you. And then you can try to go around the lamestream media essentially. So that's, I'll stop there so you can.
Yeah. I first became familiar with your channel some years ago before we met and or talked, and I didn't realize it was you behind the channel, where you kind of exposed this really strange kind of bit of communist artwork and a monument up in northern Idaho. I was just like, this is so strange. And the other thing that I find interesting about your work, Casey, is you are so polite when you deal with people. It's really grace under pressure. I'm a little more feisty, and I'd have trouble being as polite as you are. So you always keep your cool when talking to a cop or a government official or whoever. And one thing I really like about the First Amendment auditing is, you know, once you first of all, make a cop identify themselves. Like, what's your name and badge number? And by the way, I'm filming this just for my own protection. You can see the change in attitudes in these cops, like, immediately. And I just find that to be an interesting, you know, psychological phenomenon.
Well, thank you. No, the veneer has worn off a little bit, I'll say. I have had moments where I've sworn and you know, got upset. But I do try ultimately not to do that. But sometimes you get so involved in this stuff that it's a bit consuming. So I'm not perfect. Yeah, just understanding your rights. I'm sorry, what was your question specifically?
Well, I was curious about that, maybe you can go into that communist monument. Yeah, that you exposed.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, our city, our area, as with everywhere else in the nation, has become part of Agenda 21. So that's one of the things I've focused on in my community is to highlight Agenda 2030, Agenda 21. And ironically, they first called it CDA 2020, and then they rebranded it to CDA 2030. They use the same colors as the United Nations too, which is hilarious. So when you look at their sustainable development videos, a lot of their color paletting, it's the same colors. And so I actually have one of the city's CDA 2030 pamphlets and books, and I'll show it to people. I actually showed it to Alex Newman of the John Birch Society, the New American, and he went right to the education section, and he pointed out it's Common Core. So anyways, the reason I bring that up is because the art aspect of, I guess you could say, Agenda 2030 is very prominent in our community. It's a tourist town where I live in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, a very touristy, resort area. And they're cramming down our throat the transportation aspect as far as bike everywhere. We have bike paths. We have all kinds of sustainable development, you name it. And so the art comes into play because they're trying to tell people essentially this art piece was a communist hammer and sickle. It was near a playground too, which is interesting, right next to a playground. And so it had a communist hammer and sickle on it. At the top it said coal in Russian. On another, it was four-sided. And then on another side it had a red dragon rising in Chinese or Mandarin. I'm not sure what the language was. It said coal. So that was a theme. Coal is bad. You know, and so I just did a little video on it. It went viral and it forced the community to, they took it down within a week. It was gone. It had been up for over 2 years and no one had drawn attention to it. And the only reason I found out about it was because somebody in the community had told me, a photographer had told me, hey, there's this art piece down, by the playground here in Riverstone. So sure enough, I went down there and I was really kind of dumbfounded. So it did cause a huge uproar in the community, but they did take it down, and now it's been replaced by a large grizzly bear. So make of that what you will.
That makes more sense. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in, man?
Well, it's great to get to interact with Casey. I followed his work and he on Twitter as well, and really a true populist hero. Absolutely. We need many more. So what's going on with Idaho? It seemed like Idaho was really a bastion of state freedom, and all of a sudden it seemed like with this COVID scamdemic, they started to drop the hammer more, and it's increasing. What's your take on the increasing tyranny in Idaho?
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do, I think there's a lot of influence coming from Governor Jay Inslee, because we're being blamed essentially in Coeur d'Alene for not adhering, you know, for not clamping down more on the guidelines. I think there's a lot of influence from him, and of course, we know about the U.S. Mayor's Conference. So nationally, there's a lot of influence there. Apparently, Governor Brad Little has ties to China in some fashion. And so it's been very eerie. I think a lot of this, though, has to do with a group that I'm part of called People's Rights. And I did want to talk about that today. So that's a national movement where people can join. And essentially, it's a national communications network. If a family or a business is being affected by government tyranny, we can basically let people in the community know about it, and they can show up and they can try to help the person or the business however possible. We have done this. So this was started, I'll just really quickly go into this, if that's all right.
What's the website?
So the website's peoplesrights.org. You can also sign up by texting the word rights, RIGHTS, to 80123. So it's a texting service. So on the website, we also have a newsroom, because all the People's Rights were kicked off of Facebook back in October. Unfortunately, some people lost a lot of their information. They didn't back it up. But so we now have to create our own social web, of course. I think we're all very aware of that now. And so how this works is that we have basically a state is broken up into areas, and each area consists of a certain number of counties. So how this works is, well, if there's a problem in a certain area, somebody will contact an area assistant, and we're just helpers, we're just networkers, and we'll go ahead and we'll send out a text message to an area, and we'll let people know what the situation is, and, you know, hey, you need to show up at this person's house, the government is doing XYZ. And we've done this constantly, basically since, I would say, probably April of last year. This was started in outside of Boise, Idaho, essentially by Ammon Bundy. And it's been very interesting. I went down there in April to film one of their town hall. It's like a people's town hall is what it is. And we get together, we talk about problems in the community. And each area will host their own town hall, and they will run it depending on what they want to learn about. Ham, you know, comms, what do we do if you know, we basically are trying to network. We're trying to scale this thing down to a neighborhood or a town, like a city. So it can right now consists of a number of counties, but we're hoping to boil it down. Once we have enough people to sign up, it'll be more down to a city, maybe even a neighborhood subsection. So, and as of this time, I actually don't know what the current numbers of the subscription, how many people signed up so far. But last I heard, about a month ago, we had over 43,000 people signed up. We're not in every state yet. I know we're in Florida, California, a lot of the areas where people are being oppressed. It's pretty popular thing, and it gives people a lot of hope. And so we'll like show up to a health district, for instance, voting on a mask mandate, and we'll just raise hell. We'll just go outside. Like, for instance, I had one here in Coeur d'Alene in Kootenai County. We had the Panhandle Health District voting to mandate masks. And so we showed up and we had a mask burning barbecue, we had two barbecues, one for the masks and one for the food. And we had about 50 people show up. It was really fun. We had kids there, and they were having a good time. We actually did. We did that twice, actually. And so it's been very effective. But and so we've basically, the reason I bring that up is because we've been a stalwart to some of what they've been trying to implement at a statewide level, I would say, because progressively we just pop up wherever there's an issue, wherever we live, and we draw attention to it, and they hate it. And that's really, I think, one of the reasons why we got kicked off of Facebook. What time is it here? I can go into what's currently going on if you're interested with people's rights and the Capitol if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if you want to go into this yet. So essentially what's going on, so back in December, we basically have a huge target on our back now because we're essentially based out of, I would say, the Boise area, and that's where a lot of progressive things are being implemented right now. So there was Central District Health was having was meeting on December 8th to vote on mask mandates, and the people have been felt like their voices haven't been heard, and they're a bit agitated, and they had shown up at the Central District Health outside of or in Boise, Idaho, a number of times before. And each time it had ramped up where there would be more police presence at the district health. And, you know, they were really clamping it down, and so people were getting mad. So when they met on December 8th at the Central Health District, there was some people went to a nearby county commissioner's home, Diana Lasciando, who's an Ada County commissioner. There was only three people there. My friend David Pettinger, I think Robert Jones was there, I believe, and another lady. I can't think of her name off the top of my head, but they just were outside of her home on the sidewalk. They wrote in chalk on the sidewalk. I can't remember exactly what it said, no masks or something like that. And then someone had like a foghorn, and you know, they were just kind of raising hell. Well, during the health district meeting, Diana, they were on a Zoom call, and she was all upset that people were outside of her home and her child was home alone. Her 12-year-old child was apparently home alone, and there's people outside of her home banging on her door, she said, which wasn't the case. So anyway, long story short, this blew up. This actually went a bit national. And currently there's a House bill that was just passed yesterday because of that incident on December 8th. A Republican representative in Idaho, and I'm just going to give you this guy's background really quick. His name is Greg Cheney. And back in 2009, here's something interesting that happened, and I'll tell you about his bill here. It says here that he admitted to police that the incident, which involved his girlfriend, who he lived with, took place in front of the couple's four children, ages 7, 6, 5, and 9 months old, according to Caldwell police reports. The case was resolved when Cheney pled guilty to disturbing the peace, for which he was sentenced to 6 months in jail with all but 3 days suspended. The police report alleges that he also threatened to kill himself with a steak knife to show the children what a no good father he was. And in parentheses, it says that the police reports indicate that the marks on Cheney's neck, which are visible in the mugshot photo, were the result of this threat. So this guy is currently a representative. And he wrote this bill here, and it passed yesterday by a vote of 11-4 in the House, and now it's going to go over to the Senate. And this House bill is House Bill 195 related to targeted picketing, and it says that any person who intentionally engages in picketing or otherwise demonstrates on the street or sidewalk in front of a person's residence or dwelling place or the adjacent residence or dwelling place with the intent to harass, annoy, or alarm another person commits targeted picketing. The provisions of this subsection shall not apply to the residents. Anyways, it kind of goes on here, but it says any person who engages in a targeted picketing shall be guilty of a misdemeanor. And so a lot of people feel like that's an infringement on our civil liberties. And like I said, that was just passed yesterday. So that's,
oh, that was actually passed. It was actually passed.
Yes, in the House.
Okay, and you know, I saw your video of the protest and the reaction of this woman in the city council crying that her children were threatened by this dangerous mob. And meanwhile, it was really just a group of people trying to stand up for their rights. It was just a pathetic display of hyper-emotionalism used to try to manipulate people's opinion.
Yeah, and the media, of course, just ate it up. I think she was on MSNBC, too. So.
Oh, of course.
Yep.
And so
I can kind of tell you a little bit about I don't know where else you want to go with this here, but.
No, go ahead. Continue.
I know it was really interesting. It is sad to see this starting to happen here. I think ultimately the COVID issue is a blessing in disguise because it's forcing people to wake up. I heard some lady in the store who was checking out this lady's groceries, and they're both talking to each other. And the clerk says, "Well, I'm sure this is almost over. You know, we just got to just hold on a little bit longer till this is over." And I think a lot of us know this isn't going away anytime soon. So,
Yeah, Casey, I think that's one of the biggest obstacles that we face as people trying to wake people up. So many people, you know, so-called normies, think that if they just follow the rules and comply, wear their mask, take the shot, that things are going to just magically go back to normal when nothing could be further from the truth. You know, Joey the Groper, El Generalissimo Biden, has already stated that you're going to have to wear a mask for 2 more years until the end of next year.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Actually, there is something going on Idaho on March 1st. I guess I don't know a lot about it. All I really know that it's a statewide effort to just basically stand up and say we're done complying March 1st with
really?
Everything. It's a way to try to get some people. Yeah, it's a way to get people just push them off that fence that they're on maybe. And I've only seen it a little bit here and there, but I know that there's people behind that pushing it. So hopefully that'll wake some people up some more.
Well, and didn't you say the local sheriff there is refusing to enforce mask mandates, or what's the status on that?
Yeah. So we have a new sheriff now, Bob Norris, from LA originally. I believe he started his service back in 1984. And he said that he will not enforce any of the mandates, which is great. Definitely commended for that. That's so excellent.
There's a new sheriff in town.
My prior sheriff, though, that wasn't the case. I mean, he did say that the prior sheriff we had essentially was trying to kick people out of the beaches and the trailheads. That's another topic that we could talk about. I got caught up in. I moved some signs that were at a beach, and I tried to make a couple videos on it before I moved the signs. And I did have some people from the community come out and talk about it. So the signs essentially were, there was 2 A-frame signs at a local beach, and the signs essentially said that if you're from out of state, you have to basically self-quarantine for 14 days or return to the state that you're from, because we have a lot of people from neighboring Washington state that come over. Since they were cracking down so hard on people over there, they were coming over here, and they were coming to the beach, they were coming to the trailheads, and that's fine. But this basically, the sign said, you had to quarantine, so, or you would be charged with a misdemeanor. And that really pissed me off. So I made a couple of videos on it. I had a gentleman named Trevor from the community come out. He brought his AR-15 with him, and another lady named Heike, who's originally from Germany, who really understood what was going on and was disgusted by it. And they stood by the sign. We made a little video and just said how this is not right. This is unlawful. And even in the Idaho state law, it says under the definition of quarantine for them to keep people out of an area, there has to be an infectious agent or a hazardous material at the site. Well, the state, you know, of course, can't really probably prove that that's the case all the time. So I ended up taking the signs down. I took them actually back to the sheriff's department. And then they took it back to the sheriff's department, and then the prosecutor decided to prosecute me for that, for taking down the signs. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I saw your video of your court appearance through Zoom, I guess it was. You know, it's like you can't even go to court appearances now because it's just too dangerous.
Yeah.
And just the treatment that these judges give the average citizen is just despicable. They live in a different reality, and they treat citizens just like you know, a lower class of being. It's amazing.
Well, you know, the crazy thing though is that the Idaho Supreme Court Chief Justice Burdick, back in November, had basically suspended all jury trials, so nobody could even have their jury trials. And even in the Idaho State Constitution, under Article 1, Section 18, it says basically they cannot deny you access to your courthouse. It specifically says deny. They cannot deny you access. So because I wouldn't wear a mask, I couldn't go in the courthouse for my original arraignment in June. And then I got arrested, or that was in July. And then I got arrested on a bench warrant in August. Literally, as I was going to an open carry rally I put on downtown Coeur d'Alene, they came and arrested me right as I was going downtown. And literally a half an hour prior to that, I got banned from Facebook.
Wow.
That was really crazy.
A coordinated attack. And so they prevented you from going to the courthouse because you wouldn't wear a mask, and as the result of that, you get arrested. That sounds fair.
Yeah, and I guess the bailiff didn't even have she didn't know what I should do. So I gave her my name and my number, and then I just got arrested. You know, I just get arrested a couple months later. So, you know, whatever. It's the game, you know. It's just terrible what's going on right now. So then I was supposed to have a jury trial in February. I didn't end up making a plea bargain because I don't want to go to jail over this crap. So I had to pay like a $250 fine. And be on unsupervised probation for a year, which is unbelievable. But they will not prosecute a guy on January 6th who there was a Stop the Steal rally in town, and apparently he hit some people with his car. I don't think it was very severe, but he, according to eyewitnesses, hit some people with his vehicle.
Wow!
It pulled a weapon out, and because he got trapped, essentially there was militia there, and they surrounded this guy. He brandished a weapon and pointed it at people, telling them to move this truck so he could get away. He went to the sheriff's department, called 911, and told them what happened, and there was no charges filed. So if you take a sign down, though,
that's dangerous.
County. Yeah. So
go ahead, Giuseppe.
What's up?
Casey, what's the story with... I would think if there was any possibility of having a state with a populist governor, it would be Idaho. What's the story with Brad Little? When you look at his about Governor Little, he's born and raised. He's on a ranch. He learned it early to make love to sheep, and now he's a He's less government guy, but it doesn't sound like he's a less government guy. So what's his story?
No. You know, I don't know a heck of a lot about Brad Little, to be honest with you. I just know that, I mean, these guys are all part of the U.S. Mayor's Conference, and we all know that what's behind all that, you know, Agenda 21 and everything. So we have Kristi Noem in South Dakota, who's actually, you know, she's got some fortitude. We need more people like that. I really don't know what – I think a lot of these people just bought into the globalist paradigm, and they're just doing their part. And Brad Little's no different. Just because he has an R next to his name, I don't think that doesn't matter anymore, to be honest with you.
Are you familiar at all with the concept of communitarianism and what that parasitic threat entails?
Oh, yeah. I've had the Lark on my channel quite a few times over the past couple of years, and yeah, basically we're the rights of the community trump the rights of the individual. And that's actually really interesting getting to learn about that topic from Lark, because what with this thing with this Ada County Commissioner in December, it was insane to see the media and the community basically rail against the People's Rights Group. Actually, at the same time, while there were people outside of this county commissioner's home, there's a nearby human rights center in Boise, and there's an Anne Frank memorial. And that night, apparently, there were some stickers, some swastika stickers left. And then the next day, when this all came out, the comments from like the mayor, the police chief, the governor, they were basically in the same breath talking about people protesting outside this county commissioner's home and also condemning what was happening at the human rights memorial. And so to the person that has no idea what's going on, they're just going to associate the two together, and that's kind of what they did. It was really quite devious to see the community.
Well, it's just like the rabbi and the rabbi's minions always going and spray painting swastikas and then blaming the nationalists for doing it, when 9 out of 10 times it's the chicken swinger creating a false paradigm.
Yeah, you see that example after example, don't we?
Yep.
On college campuses, it's a lot of this is just it's done by it's Solowinski tactics, right?
Right. There you go.
Yeah. I thought you gave a good definition there, because, you know, communitarianism is sort of a nebulous concept until you understand it. So you said the rights of the community over the rights of the individual. That's well said.
Yeah, that's what it is. I have yet to listen to your Nikki Rapana interview yet. Looking forward to that. So.
That was good. It was great. She got all fired up. Now, afterwards, we were chit-chatting on Facebook Messenger, and she's like, you guys inspire me. So now she's coming on Scorpio.
Good.
March 13th. She realizes there's more people than just her and her daughter and up there. And
she has a history.
Yeah, she's a visionary. She needs to jump in at this point, because this is really, if we don't win some of these battles now, we're all going to have a guillotine separate our head from our body. So it's not a very good thing. We need to win some of these.
Yeah.
Hopefully Nikki can shut the work on that long distance service there from Alaska. The yurt. That's great you had her on, though. She's hard to nail down, so.
Yeah. Yeah, now, Casey, I wanted to ask you, I remember some years ago, there was this plan to set up one of these Chinese sovereign cities, essentially, in, I think it was Meridian, Idaho, right? Was it in Meridian?
I don't know. I'm not sure about that. Are you talking to Vicky again?
Yeah. How'd you know?
It's got Vicky written all over it. Yeah, I don't really know much about that.
But nothing ended up happening on it. It just sort of just died out. I guess the locals raised some serious hell about it.
Well, good, good. Yeah, one of the things I want to talk about really quick, too, if you're interested, is we had an event in Coeur d'Alene here called Liberate America. I don't think I ever really talked to you about that, did I, Dave?
No, go ahead. Continue, yeah.
Well, it's really interesting because the mainstream media, I wish I could kind of explain this all really quick, but it's a lot to this. But so basically back in I guess it would have been like April or May, I was just really frustrated. So I came up with an idea for an event called Liberate America. I had some people locally that really helped make this happen. And we had an event at the Kootenai County Fairgrounds on June 13th. And it came together really fast. I had already had some networked with a bunch of other people already. So I just basically asked some people, hey, would you be interested in coming to speak? And this is, of course, when people are freaking out about COVID, and people are starting to realize this isn't really what it seems. And this event was planned as Idaho was coming out of stage 2 into stage 3, which allowed for more people to come together. So essentially, the day after that, we went from stage 2 to stage 3, we had this event called Liberate America. And I contacted some people like Ammon Bundy, Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center, and Tom talks about Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. He's been around for quite a long time. Joey Gibson of Patriot Prayer, Representative Matt Shea, Pastor Afshin Yakhtin, who was he has a magazine called Stave Magazine. And he made national news in June of 2019 when he was arrested at a drag queen story hour in Spokane. And that's actually how I met him. but we had all kinds of people show up, and it was great. It was free admittance. People could get in for free. We had an auction. The weather was horrible. It was cold. It was windy. It was rainy. And because of the whole COVID thing, we couldn't have it in a building. Of course, we had to have it outside. So we're underneath a shelter. We had a band and some music, and it was great. And we raised over Well, we raised $3,000, which we donated to the Jeanette Finicum, or the Lavoie Finicum Legal Fund. And Jeanette was very happy about that. But it was a resounding success. We had over 3,500 people show up for it. And it kind of proved a point, because we had some people, well, the Kootenai County Democrats called the event undemocratic and damaging, and that was in the local paper. So it was the right mixture of people at the right time to really draw attention. The whole idea of Liberate America was just a way to just kind of give people hope and inspiration, so that when they go back to their communities, they can try to make a difference. So, and it was a resounding success. So, but what happened with that whole thing was, there's a lady named Rebecca Schroeder, and she condemned the event. She got threats, apparently. And through public records requests, I found out that she never reported any of this to the police. But the Idaho Statesman ran a story on Rebecca after she stated she had to move from the area due to threats from condemning my event. And this was picked up in MSNBC. And so basically they just tried to condemn it. It was at the same time when the Black Lives the Matter thing was really rampant. Back in June, we had an open carry a rally in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, with hundreds of people just open carrying, and that went national. So, but they're definitely targeting our area, the national press, those that the cultural Marxists are, they're trying, they got a strong foothold here, and we're just trying to fight back however we can.
I'm surprised that Rebecca didn't claim that someone spray painted a swastika on her front door or something.
Well, one of the things, though, actually, that's funny you should mention that. In the paper, it was mentioned that she found a bullet on her doorstep with her name etched in it. Oh, so I
sure.
That had to be a big bullet.
And through public records requests, the police were actually caught off guard because this was in the paper. And they were asking the police, how come you guys aren't doing anything about this? And the police said, well, because no one's told us about this. So it sounds like another example of just maybe making things up to, you know, propagate some sort of story. They're trying to defame, you know, the white nationalists, and we have a strong militia presence here. We're very patriotic up here, liberty loving people, and it's they're trying to destroy it any way possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in, man? What do you got?
Oh, I'm looking for, here we go. Yesterday at 5:07 PM, the gaslighting Washington Post, I always add the R because they've never met a war for Israel they didn't like, sent out a breaking news post. Capitol riot involved wider conspiracy with Oath Keepers, prosecutors say, as 6 more individuals face charges. So now you've got these decent Christian traditionalists, the Oath Keepers, who are really, I mean, to me, they're not doing enough. They have a lot of skills that they don't bring to bear in this fight for our very existence. But now they're allowing themselves to be painted into this domestic terrorist arena by the internationalist Jew. This is just so despicable, and it's, you know, how do you fight this, Casey? And my second question is, how many people in your group are now FBI infiltrators?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, that's definitely a more than likely a problem when you have it's quite an open door. People's rights is just a way to communicate, essentially, and so we try not to get political. So I mean, that is something you have to always worry about, but it ultimately, I think the benefits outweigh anything else. So it's been a good thing ultimately to have people's rights. How do you fight back against this? I guess I think people's rights is the cure, actually, because it's a template for how we can fight back. And I did an interview with Mark Windows on the World out of the United Kingdom, and they're very interested in the idea just on the face of it, because it's so powerful. I mean, we just sent out a text message. People want to do the right thing. They want to stand up to tyranny. They're sick of this. We had an incident, I'll just give you an example, at a T-Mobile store in Spokane, Washington. Somebody was in the store. They needed help with their account or something. And they were being hassled. The police were going to be called on this person. The police were called on them, but they sent out a message to their local person in Spokane, you know, letting them know what's going on. And within, I don't know, 15 minutes, people just started showing up at the T-Mobile store. And so that's just an example of how it can work. It's very fast, you know, it's very effective. But ultimately, I know there's always that worry about, you know, FBI informants. And that's always something that I think a lot of us are thinking about. I think it's good to be aware of it. I don't think we should let that diminish us, though, from trying, because there has to be something that you know, helps people stand up. And people's rights has been a great example of how to do it. If we suspect, you know, if there's somebody, you know, that's proven to be a problem, then, you know, it's dealt with. But ultimately, we're not trying to tell people what to do. We're just trying to we're just networking, essentially, is all we're essentially doing. And we do have an educational aspect, but that's, you know, very warranted right now. And we don't know if our communications network is going to be up. You know, we don't know if we'll have our cell phones. We'll have to maybe use hams at some point. So it's important for us to get ready for what's coming down the line.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, the classic tactic of any kind of FBI infiltrator is to try to talk people into doing something that's either illegal or something that's going to make you look really bad and set you up for some kind of, you know, pre-planned media event. And so that's those are easy red flags to sort of watch out for. But Casey, I wanted to ask you, you know, since you have a lot of contact with just, you know, people around town and through your activism, you know, what do you think the percentage of people are that are buying into this whole COVID narrative in your area? Because, I mean, are people dropping like flies and the bodies stacking up behind the hospital, or what's happening on that front right now?
Yeah, I don't know what the current numbers are, to be honest with you, locally. But I think people are starting to see through it. Since we started this back in May or April, since we've really pushed people's rights locally, I mean, I'm seeing people are really starting to see through this now. You know, we have people are going to restaurants, and that's really been the case here originally anyway, is that we haven't really been cracking down so much. The city did pass a mask mandate, and so they did have a campaign. They used some of the CARES money to create a campaign, and I think they spent like over $25,000 on a media campaign locally to, you know, try to get people to wear masks and whatever. But I think the thrill is gone. People are they're done with it.
Thrill is gone.
We have a group, you know, like we have people moving here from all over the nation, really. Mm-hmm. So we do have a lot of people that are, you know, more liberal minded, I would say. It's definitely changing from conservative to a bit more liberal up here. But ultimately, we're just not going to have it. We're just not going to put up with it up here. And that's the way it's going to be for a while anyways.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to step on you, Casey. Go ahead. Finish up.
No, you're good. I was going to say, they really have to change the dynamics here before, you know, that were to happen. So,
yeah.
I think it's going to pull through. I think we're going to get rid of these people that are causing issues and clean house.
Well, and you'd think, you know, so-called liberals, they would be interested in liberty as well. I mean, I think that'd be a way to reach the people that are so-called liberals. I mean, do you want to see your child grow up as a slave wearing a mask with no opportunities in life? Or do you want to reclaim your way of life and stand up to this tyranny that's coming at us full speed ahead? I guess it's good to try to speak to people in a language so they can understand. And I think some liberals have to be wondering about what's going on. And I guess my question is, what's happening with the vaccine front there in Idaho? Are people lining up by the millions to get the shot, or is there some kind of reluctance?
I had been working closely with Washington State, and I know Washington State There's 4 mass vaccination centers in that state, but not so much in Idaho. I don't know what the metrics are right now on the vaccinations. So, you know how it is. You just get busy doing all these things, and it's hard to keep tabs on. I'm kind of covering Washington and Idaho and kind of going all over the place. So, but no, I don't really think it's people. We don't have like a mass vaccination site or anything like that here. It's just people are scheduling a time to get the vaccination, which is not a good idea. That nanotomy.
Yeah.
So come on, bro. But, you know, tell people double mask.
Triple mask.
There you go. Quadruple.
5 masks.
Yeah, you do not want to take that injection. That is a deathly assault on a real human.
Yeah, tell us what's in that, Giuseppe, because I know you know.
Well, what they do is there's all types of the same poisons, the adjuvants, you know, the aluminum, the mercury, the stuff that can get through the blood-brain barrier. But what they do that's so insidious is they take a little fabricated, it's not even from the real world, it's essentially at a nano level, like a 3D printing strand of messenger RNA. Then they wrap it in a lipid, in a fat, and then they coat the lipid bullet with a little PEG, I forget how you pronounce that word, but it's essentially a little lacquer, right? For lack of that allows this little bullet to penetrate a cell. Then the lacquer releases and opens up the fat oozes into the nutrient part of the cell. And then much like typical genetic modification, they've used CRISPR technology. So that mRNA has a little program to go and insert, clip out the real mRNA and insert into your own DNA and start to, I thought it was going to be pumping out a ton of antibodies. But a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when Dr. Carrie Medej was on the show, she's a brilliant scientist and doctor, she says, no, it's going to be creating the virus itself. So anyone who gets that injection is going to become a super spreader, Typhoid Mary and Typhoid Larry. It's deep, wow. Disturbing. Yeah.
No vax for me, that's for sure.
Yep. But, you know, the good news is ultimately it still is a coronavirus. And if you keep your immune system at peak efficiency, you can quite literally survive even this new spreading. But it's you don't want to do stupid things like eat a lot of Twinkies or drink a lot of booze or do things that there it is, polyethylene glycol, Pat Rabbit. Thanks, Pat Rabbit. You got to stay healthy if you want to live and avoid that shot as though your life depended on it, because it does.
What now they're saying there's 40 different strains?
Well, that's the joke, Casey, is the coronavirus is ubiquitous in nature. It's already in every human. It's already in every mammal. It's in reptiles. It's in the dirt. And it mutates all the time. The gaslighting lies that these globalist traitors to humanity are blowing out their rectums. It's just so ridiculous. Here's a good rule of thumb. Anything the World Health Organization says, anything the CDC says, anything Tony Fauci says, anything Bill Gates says, do the opposite and you may make it through.
Good advice. So, Casey, your YouTube channel is North Idaho Exposed, correct?
Yeah, yep. And I have a public – I'm on Rumble and 3Speak and BitChute and all that too, but I primarily use YouTube. I also have a public record board just for the locals. If they're – you know, I'll put those out for whatever public records I get, depending on whatever topic it is. And that's just northidahoexposed.wordpress.com. And so that's been pretty vital lately. That's one of the things I did want to talk about is public records.
Okay.
If you're interested.
No, absolutely. Of course. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the things that it's so easy to do. And I think people just, they don't know, well, They just don't know the ins and the outs of it. But if you want to do any public records requests, it's really simple. And I just advise people to just go on your search engine and look up the state you're in and look up public record letter. And you'll find like a template. Real simple. It'll state the state statute for the public records request, and then you just put in your information. And you don't want it, whenever you do a public record request, you want to keep it really simple. Every area is different, every community. Some places use an online portal, but I'll just use this template letter, and I'll just send it to whatever department I'm looking for public records from. And then if they want you to use an online portal, they'll let you know, go to this link and sign in and do it that way. But, it's very effective. If you see an article in the paper that's talking about a topic that you're interested in, I suggest do a public record request on it. If you think maybe it needs some more light shown on it. It's just really simple. I just encourage people to do it on a regular basis. Do a public record request for your name. And all it has to be is just, I want all emails from my city's email domain at cdaid.org. So you're going to get all the information from the domain and then just use your name. And you'll be surprised what you can get back doing that. And I've done hundreds of public records requests. I actually have somebody paying me now to do public records requests for them because they don't want to, be involved in it, let's say. But it's super easy and people should be doing it all the time, I think.
Well, that's a great idea. When you did a public records request on yourself, what came back?
Well, that's actually how that's one of the things I did want to talk about too, is that's how I found out about this thing here locally. Well, it's actually a regional thing called Regional Intelligence Group 9. So I was really digging into the law enforcement here and now because I filmed them so much, they run from me. And so that's pretty cool. But that takes a little time to develop. But basically it's information that's disseminated to all law enforcement agencies in the region. So they basically, what happened was I was taking constitutions, full-size constitutions, which I got from the Secretary of State, into the police department, into the sheriff's department. And I'd walk in with a stack of constitutions and give them to them. Well, they had a picture of me walking in the police station in one of these regional intelligence group 9 reports that's disseminated to the FBI, DHS, you name it. It's being disseminated to everybody. Basically just saying that I'm coming in the police department to give them constitutions, and made me look like a wacko. And then underneath that, they had all these people that were wanted for serious crimes. And I have a copy if you want to see it. I got two of them just from doing a public record request on myself. And then the sheriff in Spokane, Sheriff Ozzy Knezovich, doing the public records request this way. I have an email from him asking how did he get the Regional Intelligence Group 9 bulletin, because they weren't supposed to give it to me and they screwed up. So that's one of the cool things too, is a lot of times they'll screw up when they're doing these things. And that's how I found out about another incident. They were the police here were monitoring us while we were at the courthouse on November, I think it was November 7th, for a friend of ours, Krista Thompson, and she was the mother who was charged for having a yard sale and not isolating in her home. She got charged with a misdemeanor for that. So we were supporting her, and they did drop the charges that day, but the police were monitoring us because we weren't wearing masks. And that became wow. That report. So they were submitting video, they were submitting pictures, they used my video from that day, and they uploaded it to their what they call Viper, where they keep all their goodies. And it came out in the media that there's the city court of Lands will get prosecuting four people. Well, it ended up being us. So you can find out some really wacky things if you just do a public record request on yourself. And I suggest everybody do that. So
is there a link to help people learn how to do that or did you do a video or something? Or
yeah, I've done a couple videos. I'll probably need to do a more up-to-date one so I can show people. But the underlying thing I want to get a stress here is that when you do a public records request, you want to keep it short and sweet, because in Idaho, at least, there's a statute if you cannot basically alter a public records request to avoid fees. So if in Idaho, if they have to produce more than 100 pages or work more than 2 hours on a public record request, then they'll start per hour to do the public request. So keep it really. So thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Casey, you thanks come for back. Coming on. Great conversation. And thanks for all the work you do, Casey. You've got some great stuff up there. Everybody visit his site on YouTube, North Idaho Exposed. And until next week, everyone take care. Bye-bye.